Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. It's Deborah. Just letting you know, this is another crossover episode. We have teamed up with our friends at All Killer No Filler to bring you All Killer No Feminism, an exciting crossover mashup episode. Also, The Guilty Feminist Classic with me, Deborah Frances White, and some mega guests will be in New York City at Gramercy Theatre on the 4th of January 2020. But tickets are going fast. There aren't many left. So go to guiltyfeminist.com ASAP and click the link under live shows to get yours now. And now, on with the podcast. All killer, no feminism. I'm a feminist, but I had a fantasy that Lizzo was my friend. But in it, I just agreed with everything she said because she's so much cooler than me.
Well, like, was she like being really racist and you're like, yeah, I think that as well? Did you just go along with anything?
It was just a daydream where I went, all you would do if you were her friend would be to go, yeah. And I thought this would not be a fun friendship for her.
Also, it's your daydream. Make it what you want. You've ruined it for yourself there.
I know. I know that's very much the point of the I'm a feminist part.
It's not even a dream that you've got. No, it's literally you just going, oh, I'm going to think about it. Look, I can bang Liam Gallagher whenever I want, mate.
But are you never low status in your own fantasies or your own...
I can tell you now she's fucking not. Not low status anywhere.
Like, do you imagine sort of like meeting some like pin-up or somebody fabulous or whatever and you're chatting to them in the chat? Are you always like on top of it and super sassy?
Yeah, we're having a good time, we're getting on. I have these little, yeah, I think things like that. All the time. You think, oh, I bet me and that person would get on, and you have a little think about it. And then you're like, yeah, you're in
And then you Google their name and super injunction and they're not, I don't think they would get on.
You see their name trending on Twitter and think, oh.
I'm a feminist, but when I go to a football match and there's a really good atmosphere and everyone's really like, yeah, shouting and cheering and stuff, and I hear a female voice going, go on, Aguero, go wide, go wide. I'm like, no.
I feel so much better about being a little low status to Lizzo now.
I think you might have eased me into my one, which is the reason I was like, you go first. I'm a feminist, but I'm obsessed with true crime, which means I spend a disproportionate amount of time worrying about being abducted. And most of that worry is, how will they describe my body type? If it's hefty, throw my bones in the sea.
I'm a feminist, but for years I had a Playboy bunny diamante necklace because I thought it gave me an edgy, sexy recklessness.
Guilty of that also.
And all it gave you was a green mark on your skin.
I did. I'm a feminist, but when I hear plans to bring the retirement age of women to the same as men, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. This equality thing's getting out of hand. Not on my watch. Not for me.
I'm a feminist, but I insist on ironing my male friends and family shirts, claiming that I can do it better. I have ruined 8 shirts. Love, do you want a glass of water? You sure? Oh, don't stifled it down.
You're right. Get that pint down, you. You're all right.
Sure.
That's the spirit.
I think we've got our first murder. Our first murder to solve is in the front row.
Can I just say, this lady has pulled a bottle of water out of a lovely All Killer No Filler tote bag.
Yeah.
Is it an All Killer No Filler tote bag?
Yeah. It's got our faces on it. No, don't apologise.
No,
I followed
someone
2 bus stops longer than I should have because I saw one. And I was like, that's my face. And they were like, okay. So exciting.
Do you follow people who carry your merch?
Not always.
And try and get their peripheral vision and hope they recognise you?
No, because usually I look like shit and nothing like even a cartoon of me. So I'm like, please don't see me now. And be like, that looks like a fat, tired version of Kiri Pritchard-McLean.
Well, do you know what? When I feel I look like that, when I go out of the house like that and someone does recognise me, I get really upset.
Yeah.
Because I think, how do you think I look like this when all of my press shots are so very glamorous?
Yes.
So I'm like, they just go, oh, you're Deborah Francis White for The Guilty Feminist. And I'm like, but I look like a really bad version of that. So don't assume that.
They could have some kind of like eyesight problem though. So they're looking at you through a soft focus.
They're looking at me through rose-coloured glasses, babe. Yes. I think that's very clearly the case.
I realised a couple of months ago, I was like, I really like it when people come up to me and talk to me about the podcast and go, oh, I love your podcast. And I'm like, yeah, brilliant. I love this, mate. This is great. I should be mega famous because I'm a brilliant famous person. But I realised it was happening in the pub all the time. Because I kept saying, got recognised in the pub. And I'm like, I'm spending too much time in the pub. I was like, this is the issue. This is the issue. Happened to me last night in the pub.
See, I normally get recognised at feminist rallies. Marches, protests.
Really? For me, it's orgies. You wouldn't believe. You wouldn't believe.
Oh, those with the models, those orgies.
Yeah, with all the fit models.
I'm too scared to go anything like Killing Kittens now. Do you guys know what Killing Kittens is? It's not true crime. It's a sex sort of event.
A sex event?
Yeah, it's a sex event.
So Alan Partridge. Sonia, we're having a sex event.
It's not what they don't market it that way. Oh my God, they're going to call me and say, please stop describing us. It's a sex event. They have them up the top of like penthouses and stuff. And everyone dresses up and everyone wears masks and it's all very glamorous and only women can approach. Women can approach women, women can approach men. Men can't approach anybody. Excellent.
Perfect.
As they should be in life, but isn't.
Yeah.
And
posh Bumble.
Yeah. But posh 3D live in the room Bumble.
Lovely.
Yeah. But everyone wears masks. But you can at some point take the mask off because they are a bit annoying, I think. I hear. But now I think I don't want someone coming up to me and going, I love your podcast, can I have a selfie, when I've just got like my tits out.
Oh yeah.
Has that...
Surely just keep the mask on. They're not going to go, I could recognise those tits. I mean, I think you feasibly could if you follow me in every kind of situation.
To be fair. But I think it's my voice people know a lot. Because
Pipe down?
How do you hit on someone without saying anything, though?
Do like a Bane distorter.
That's not going to make me feel sexy. I suppose I could do an accent.
Yes. Think of it as character work.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel that sex party, I keep thinking about it, I feel like that kind of sex party would just bring out the worst bit of the working class in me. I'd be like, why do we have to do this in a fucking penthouse? And then I'd be like, we're not doing it in the bed, we'll do it in the toilet like usual. Yeah, that'd be really out of my depth, I think.
Seeing if someone can fuck the chip off your shoulder.
Oh, absolutely. The one chip, mate, is a whole bag of them. Covered in gravy.
Oh, my canes.
Sex parties.
We know, if you listen to our podcast, you might have heard this before, but there's a promoter in the Northwest who organises orgies. That we both gig for on the way up. Not at the orgies.
No,
but
orgies.
Stage time. And I was once at a gig and they said, how much do you charge in? He said, oh, what I do is I charge a fiver and that gets your nibbles as well. And
at the sex party?
Nibbles? They're not what you're thinking of is not what they are. It's more just like a static caravan.
And a dairily lunchable.
Yeah, and a dairily lunchable.
A caravan, that's not a sex party, what? That's just him.
As a feminist, if you went there, no one would recognise you, I promise.
Maybe that's the way forward, is go to only sex parties in caravans.
Yes.
I'm really not that keen on sex, to be honest with you. I mean, I like it, not enough to have a dairy lunchable.
Oh no. Look, even I wouldn't eat a dairy lunchable, and that is saying something. Absolutely not. No. No way.
Well, this has digressed quickly, isn't it?
Yes.
So if you're listening at home, we should probably say what our podcasts are, because there will be people listening who perhaps didn't come because they thought, what's that?
You can explain us. We've got an do the introduction.
Oh, yeah. I think. Oh, yeah.
You're enablers. And I resent it deeply.
Oh, I'm excited. Welcome to this special crossover episode of Old Killer, No Feminism, with me, Rachel Fairbanks, Pritchard-McLean, and Deborah Frances White. Just before we start, we'll do our usual disclaimer. We do this podcast because we have a mutual interest in serial killers, and as long as we are doing this podcast...
It's not surprising!
Thank you. I did miss a bit out there. And it shows.
Yeah, you fucked your own introduction, mate.
It shows how confused by new words I am. That's fine.
Oh, yes. This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and the hypocrisies and insecurities which... Yeah!
There you go. Yeah. Smashed it, guys.
It
well
nice.
Done.
Yeah,
very nice.
So basically, we chat about murder.
Yeah.
That's it.
But,
and everything
but
else.
But today, feminist murder.
Yeah, but well, I think murder is a feminist issue. Genuinely, I want to write a book called that, so put those... Ask the universe. Not that I believe in that shit. But... Yeah, I think that murder is a feminist subject.
Yeah.
Because usually women are the ones that get murdered.
Yep, absolutely.
Or blamed for people murdering. And also a lot of the rhetoric around true crime is really sort of sensationalist and really sort of like, I would say it's women dying with their tits out. So it's all just really like, and grubby.
Yeah.
And we wanted a podcast that wasn't that and had a level of empathy to it. And I hope that's what we've made.
Yeah. And also just to talk to each other, how women actually talk to each other.
It's so funny. American men tweet us, be like, you guys are outrageous. The way you speak to each other, like, that's how women speak when you're not around, motherfucker.
That's what's good about podcasts, isn't it? That men can listen in on how we talk when they're not there and they're not interrupting.
We But you know what we had is our demographic, the nature of true crime is it's lots of women. So we had like, it was probably 70-30. And then we went on Richard Herring's podcast, which is pure sausage. And it swung it back the other way. And loads of men, like, were very sweet, were like, started listening and were like, this is actually really good, girls. We're like, yeah, we know.
Well done.
But they were just, it was an interesting thing that hit. They had never sought out two women having a conversation.
Can I just pop something on the tape? This is a bit like me saying sex event now. I'm trying not to say anything like sex event. I'm trying not to say anything Alan Partridge-y. When you said, oh, it's usually women being killed, in fact, homicide victims are mostly male. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of female homicide victims, but I think serial killers almost exclusively seem to kill women. So homicide is sometimes just punching somebody or, you know, I'm going to kill you because you did this to me, or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to revenge or something like that. But why do serial killers, is it a serial killing almost exclusively an act of misogyny?
I think it varies. I think there's groups that are targeted. I would say sex workers, young girls, homeless people and gay guys, but which are groups who are marginalised and not protected.
Yeah.
So you can get away with killing more of them for longer.
I think well, while men are, you know, the highest level of murder victims, I think the way in which women are killed is much more aggressive. It's usually hateful.
I mean, any killing is aggressive, isn't it?
Oh, really? Yeah, well, I know. I mean, like, there's usually... I mean, look at sort of domestic violence and stuff like that. It's usually... How do I explain this? Sort of an act of...
It's into a power dynamic,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's an act of power, 100%, and control. And, obviously any murder is bloody awful, let's be honest.
And She'll say it. She doesn't care who's listening.
I'll tell you,
murder's bloody awful. You heard it here first.
I mean, absolutely out of order.
There will be more hot takes like this tonight. Friends, not as good as we thought it was in the 90s. But it's all we had in those days. Before we had think pieces on how awful Friends is. Friends.
I was ahead of the curve with Friends. I hated it. And do you know why? I thought every single character was an absolute piece of shit. And I even thought this at a young age. I was like, why do people watch these awful people who do these horrible things that are meant to be funny?
They were very pretty.
Yeah, but, you know, still cunts, though, weren't they? Horrible.
If we weren't able to enjoy watching pretty cunts, what would be the point of having a television?
Oh, wildlife documentaries, they're good.
Some of them are pretty cunts. You watch Attenborough, they're always after each other. Talk about aggressive structural violence that chimps and monkeys have, the female monks, and then the actual violence that the male chimps and monkeys, I'm not sure which ones are which, to be honest with you, so I'm in dangerous territory here, but, you know, it's very interesting. And a lot of nature, pretty cunts.
Chimpanzees are my least favourite animal. They are.
Chimpanzees are your least favourite animal. You know they're our closest relatives, aren't they?
Not bothered.
I'm indifferent about chimps. I didn't realise I'd be asked this tonight. I have no strong feelings.
I'm a feminist, but I have to admit, I was a bit behind the curve with All Killer, No Filler. Everyone was telling me it's brilliant, and I just haven't got around to listening to it. And I always think, oh, God, I don't listen to enough of other people's podcasts. And then when I came to do this crossover season, I thought, everyone's been saying how brilliant it is. I've got to listen to it. So I did what I always do if I'm listening to someone else's podcast for the first time and there's already like 100 episodes or whatever. I just scroll down and look for a guest that I might like. So for example, today I listened to David Mitchell on Rilla Hestepa. And I was scrolling through and I was thinking, God, I don't know any of the names of these guests. And I thought, God, you know, it's really successful. I'm surprised they've not got more famous people on. And I thought, well, maybe I'm just out of the loop with comedians. They probably are famous and I just don't know. You know, I didn't know half the people got nominated in Edinburgh this year. And then I saw like Fred West, and I thought, I know his name. I think these people might be murderers, not comedians. Honestly, it took me so long to work it out. I was like, oh. And do you know what I also thought? I judged you because I thought, it's very male heavy. Thought they don't have any female guests on. They don't have any female guests at all.
It is very male and white.
So yeah, it's male. Very male. Like, oh, all these straight white comedians they booked. Where are all the women? You know, why have they not had Sophie Duker on or Olga Koch or Kemar Bob? Oh, here's another straight white man. But you have, and I do need to call out, you focus on a lot of straight white male serial killers. Is it because it's hard to find
you
diversity?
You work with what you've got.
Well, it's hard to find diversity.
I mean,
it's what they say about Mock the Week. It's hard to find the women.
Well, actually, there are quite a few female serial killers, but they tend to be a group that we're not interested in. We're not a fan of a poisoner,
no,
are we?
Boo. Don't, not into poisoners.
Very boring, a poisoner. And women tedious. Tend to poison. Mm. Mm. Yeah, it's very common. That'll be most of them will poison.
Well, you don't need a lot of upper body strength.
Yeah.
For arsenic.
And it's sort of like, it's still in the kitchen, isn't it? So, which is their domain. I don't go in there when she's cooking. So, yeah, so it's a very sort of surreptitious way of doing it. Whereas men is like, you know, lots of violent secretions. There's all kind of, you know, it's quite high drama.
Very
so,
messy.
Yeah, women tend to be poisonous or are what they're called, angels of death.
Yeah.
Nurses.
Yeah. Or they're helping men, aren't they? It's like they're sort of in love with the man who's telling them, he's got them in his spell.
There's a fair few of those killer couples.
Yeah.
You can see it if you're a fan of Channel 5. I mean, every other programme is about that over there.
Is it wrong for me to say she's in his spell when she's been a proactive part of it? Is that essentially unfeminist that I'm saying, she doesn't have autonomy, and also I'm giving him all the credit for the killing? Or is it... Is it also not okay to say, she's just this little victim, you know, when she's actually killed teenagers or whatever?
I think there's... A lot of time it's an abusive relationship, 100%. I mean, not that I'm justifying it. Myra Hindley, that was an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardino, that was an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time a woman is frightened of a man, but also in awe of him and under his control, maybe?
I think some people take it's better to be, the right hand of the devil than in his way. Mm. So I think there's some women who are genuinely frightened and are in a coercive, controlling relationship. And also, if they get them young as well, they romance the idea of doing this ultimate act of sacrifice together. But when it comes down to it, like, you're still a human being. Like, loads of people have been in controlling relationships and don't go on to murder.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a certain amount of, like, yeah. Again, another hot take.
many people in this room may have been in a relationship they found controlling and yet have limited their homicide to fewer than six people.
I was that fucking close, though, to be honest. Yeah, it's a really interesting thing that when it's couples, because it is often a power I can't think of any couples where the woman has held the power in that situation. But it is. But I'd say it's fairly equal when you get to Fred and Rose.
I was going to say, you took the words right out of my mouth.
One of Rachel's top three. So.
Yeah, Fred and Rose West, definitely. I don't think there was any sort of imbalance of power there. I think they were both very much into what they were doing.
Yeah.
She did sort of say that she was frightened of him, but years later, when the shit hit the fan.
But I think you were saying something interesting to me the other day about this, that we are more fascinated as a society by women who kill, because we expect women to be nurturers.
Yes.
So we're always like, but how could she have? So we are actually collectively more judgmental of a woman who can leave her caring and nurturing role, which she should really just be stroking a kitten while suckling a newborn at all times.
Is this one of those things in a penthouse with a mask?
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's absolutely true that women tend to get, for violent crimes, get harsher sentencing because it's deemed to be basically moving away from the stereotype that you're a caregiver, you're a safe thing. It's also really dark in cases like Ian Brady and Myra Hindley. Myra Hindley was the reason that those children felt safe to get in that van because, he's with a woman. Like, they know not to get in a van with a man, but with a woman there. So it's really dark. But there's the flip side of it in that when they were caught, Myra Hindley wasn't arrested because they assumed, a woman could never be implicated. So she had 5 days to just destroy evidence because they were like, it couldn't possibly be a woman, because she was literally like, I was looking the other way while it was all happening. But she was just as heavily implicated as him. And same with Fred and Rose. They bugged the house that she was in, and that's the only way that they sort of got anywhere near realising that it was teamwork and not just him doing it all.
I think it's interesting as well, you know, because obviously women aren't expected to murder. I mean, people don't like it when we, you know, voice displeasure at something or have an opinion, so they're certainly not going to like it when we actually kill somebody, which is a man's job. So when you're a kid and you get told, like, you know, if you get lost in the supermarket or whatever, what my mum used to say to me was, always go to a woman, a lady or a woman with children, because you assume, like, they're decent people. They're not going to take you away and murder you, are they?
And as we've established, it's not an absolutely safe bet, but it certainly is a safer bet.
Yes. Mm.
If you know, you have to tell your kid something. You can't say, if you get lost, just stand there.
Yeah.
And panic. And, like, you have to say, go towards
Paige,
a woman.
Don't get lost, you little fucking idiot. You've got one job in a supermarket, and it's not to get lost. One job. That's what I would say.
Babe, you may be in danger of raising a serial killer. Please put your hands together and give an enormous all-killer, no-feminism welcome to the incredible Rachel Ferber!
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, it feels really weird, like, doing that and then coming over here. I've got to do my actual job now. It feels bizarre. Lovely. So, obviously, I'm very interested in true crime. I'm fascinated by serial killers, which my friends find weird, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, you lot are interested in serial killers. And what fascinates me is why people serial kill. I say people, I mean men. Now, obviously, I'm not getting a men. I absolutely love men. The amount of pregnancy scares I've had will attest to that. It is... And of course, I love men. Some of my best friends are men. And it's not, you know, it's not all men. It's not all men. Of course it is not all men, but it's not all dogs either, but some do bite and have to be dealt with. Now, what fascinates me about, I mean, like, men, you do serial kill more than women, 100% you do. And women, we're not better than that because we do serial kill, as we were just chatting about before. Usually when we serial kill, though, it's with somebody else. Like, we're usually in love with them. We'll do anything to please them. It's like we're a bit brainwashed by them. It's actually the same set of circumstances that we do anal. Although, I'll be honest with you, if I was with a bloke and he said, look, Rach, you've got two options tonight. Number one, I do you up the bum. Number two, we go out and kill a stranger. I'd be like, right, start the car. I'll get a hammer and some bin liners. Because that first one is not happening. What fascinates me, though, genuinely about serial killers, it's like the trigger for why people serial kill. Just that one thing that happens. Like, I was reading about Jeffrey Dahmer recently. Of course, you're familiar with Jeffrey Dahmer. He killed and mutilated a lot of young men in America in the 1990s. And the trigger for him serial killing was, it was when he was going through puberty. He had all these hormones going around his body. He discovered he was gay. He was dissecting animals at school and at home, which he shouldn't have been doing. And he started to associate sexual pleasure with dissection. Now, I can relate to that. Not that bit, obviously. Just whatever you're into during puberty really does affect your sexual life later on. Like, for example, when I was going through puberty, I was obsessed, and still am, absolutely obsessed with Liam Gallagher. And to this day, I can't orgasm unless somebody shouts, sunshine! Lovely, I enjoyed that.
Rachel Ferber, everybody! Please welcome to the stage the wonderful, the one, the only, Kerry Pritchard-McLean!
Hello. Also very interested in serial killers. Obsessed with serial killers in particular because they're lacking in empathy. And that's what I find really fascinating. I read loads. I would go down a rabbit hole every night. I'm on, like, Wikipedia reading about serial killers. And when I read about them, I get the same kind of response you get when you watch a really sort of scary film. I get, like, palpitations. I get quite scared. And I guess it's being stimulated. Not in a, like, Ted Bundy way, but, like, I... Like, I'm sort of fascinated by it. But what's happened is, out in the real world, I have sort of mistaken that energy for the frisson of sexual chemistry. I've met people, and, like, my body is clearly sending me, like, alarm signals, and I'm like, hello. You know, I meet a guy with hollowed out eyes who's like, yeah, I'm an insomniac and I live in my mum's basement. I'm like, tell me more, big boy. It's shocking. I got so convinced that I was going to fuck a serial killer, right? I was absolutely convinced. I was like, this is how I'm going to die. That I would sort of like take it into account on nights out. So I was thought, right, if I pull a guy, we're going back to my house. Because like, you want to be murdered in your own home, don't you? Do you know what I mean? It's like having the shits. You don't want it to happen. But if it's going to happen, you want it to be in your fucking bathroom, don't you? I don't want to be murdered on his house. No way. I don't want to be chopped up on an IKEA rug that everybody's got. No, I've got hardwood floors. I became obsessed with the idea that my partner was a serial killer. I'm not totally off the idea either. So there's quite a lot that stacks up about it. He can eat half a chocolate bar and put the other half in the fridge. Fucking weird. He's got an estranged father. Ding, ding. When we got together, we'd have emotional conversations. He'd find them physically exhausting and need to sleep afterwards. It's hard learning how other people feel, isn't it, darling? And for the first 18 months that we were together, he was living in his dead mum's house. Hey-oh! That's a full house of serial killer bingo, isn't it? But we're settled now. I think he's the one that I'm going to be with forever. I think, yeah, we're settled down, which means that I think we're going to get married. We're talking about getting married, which means either I'll make an honest woman of me or a woman suit of me. Either way, it's my big day. My worst nightmare at the moment is that he makes a woman suit of me and looks thinner in my skin than I do. Thank you. We sort of broke it down into categories of things that we're quite interested about in relation to feminism and murder. Mm-hmm. So one is, we've talked about the women in couples, but also about how victims are treated in relation to sex workers in particular.
Yeah. So if you particularly look at the Yorkshire Ripper as well, when he was committing his murders, he killed sex workers, I think it was like 4 sex workers, and then he killed a girl who wasn't a sex worker. And that was when the outrage started. And one of the comments, I think, was actually, he's killed a decent girl now. And this is when it started to be taken seriously, because sex workers, they just weren't thought of as, you know, actual people in a way.
Yeah. Which, just before we got here, Busman's Holiday, we were writing up a podcast on the Boston Strangler. So we're writing up, and it was a BBC article that said of it, everyone was shocked by the Boston Strangler because he wasn't killing sex workers and vagrants, he was killing respectable women. And it's just such a really horrible thing that you see repeated over and over again, is that sex workers' lives are seen as disposable and being murdered is seen as an occupational hazard.
Yeah.
Which is why serial killers are allowed to get up to the numbers because they're just seen as a disposable part of society.
I even think as recently as the Ipswich Strangler, that was big news at the time, but I don't think it was as big or as important or reported as it should have been because the women were sex workers. It just felt a bit like, oh yeah, this bloke's murdered all these prostitutes. That's what it kind of felt like a little bit.
I think that's still the case now, that in most conversations about that I think might take place about sex workers, not in the bubble that we're in, but outside that bubble, there is a sense of exactly what you're saying. Well, it's an occupational hazard and somehow you're less than. Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples of this? Or are you just talking sort of
have I killed any sex workers?
No.
Well, one of the things I'm proudest of is we got a message a few months ago from a woman who runs a network that supports sex workers. She's a sex worker, and I think they're based in Edinburgh, London, and Leeds. Mm-hmm. And she sent this a most amazing message saying, loads of women who are sex workers like true crime, but won't engage with it because of the tone that's taken. With them, like, you know, and it was, they'll call them prostitutes and fallen women and all this kind of stuff, and go, well, she was out, what does she expect? So they were saying that ours is the podcast that they listen to because they don't feel like they're marginalised, and they feel like there's a more empathetic approach on it, which I was like, it's like, genuinely, I was so absolutely made up. And we did a collection, we usually do collections for stuff at our shows. I can't remember, it was London once, wasn't it?
I think it was London, yeah.
So we asked her, because our listeners are really engaged and really empathetic as well. I said to them, what is useful for us to collect on your behalf? Because we've done it before with period poverty charities and things like that. And she was like, Johnny's and lube. And I was like, I think they can cover this. And then, so
I mean, I couldn't cover the lube if you've been listening to me.
there's an in-joke there that we won't get into. It's quite a dry subject, if you will.
My boyfriend's mum came to watch the live show we did in Edinburgh, and somebody mentioned that incident. And afterwards, we went for lunch. We were in Hawksmoor having a steak, and she went, "What was that thing they were talking about that I'm not allowed to know about?" I was like, "Let's just leave it. Eat your dinner, Julie. Shut up."
So we did a collection of Johnnies. One of the women from the organisation came and collected them, and they counted them up, and there was over 1,000. And the woman sent a message, and she went, "Can you tell them thank you?" Because it was like the biggest single donation. They've had to split them up between all three branches. There's been so much. And they said, "And we're really pleased because they've got the extra safe ones, which are dearer." So you fucking spent the money, guys. Well done. So it's just a really nice thing, and it feels like something that we could, because we don't want to be, it's one of the reasons why we haven't done adverts, because we don't want to be another organisation like profiting off dead girls.
Because it doesn't feel right to have adverts, does it? It just never felt the right thing.
Well, also, what's
thing?
The, be like, and then he killed another sex worker. The thing about Diet Chef is you, do you know what I mean? It feels
murdered in her own home, in her own bed. Speaking of which, Casper mattresses. It just doesn't work, does it?
So it's been really great hearing from that community. And I'm not saying we've got it right all the time, because we've been doing it 4 years and we've been learning about terminology and how to speak about people and the best way to speak about people and to people. But I think that's something that I'm really proud of, is our relationship that we have.
So if anybody's got any condoms on them tonight or any lube, please leave it in a basket at the door.
Oh, when we did a big venue in Salford, so there's an in-joke that we have different, not approaches, we have a different set of beliefs when it comes to anal sex.
You say one thing once when you're hungover, and it haunts you for 3 years now. You have it shouted at you in the street.
It's your aha. That's what it is.
Aha.
So Rachel was scolding me because I had a long-term partner and I hadn't had anal sex with him. And then she was like, "Oh, fucking grow up, whack it in." And I was like, "You've got to have a conversation about it." And she's like, "It's not a fucking holiday." And she was really sort of telling me off. And then she was sort of saying, "Just chuck it in." And I was like, "Well, what about lube and stuff?" And she's like, "No, fuck it." So one of the things we did is we bought for our audiences, we're trying, where we can do little presents, we brought sachets of lube and we put a sticker on it with hashtag dry bumming. And then we did a big sort of like council theatre with every person on the, brilliant as they are, every member of staff was, I'd say, pushing 80. And we had to sort of hand them a box of lube and be like, "Can you just hand these out?" And these poor sort of women being like, "I've been told to give you one of these." But they were brilliant about it. They were lovely, but it didn't feel like our finest hour, did it?
No, I mean, I wasn't happy about any of it, to be quite honest with you. The stickers, the lube, the elderly women having to get involved.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So tell us about a serial killer.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Who do you want to do? Should we talk about Tilly Clemenc? Yeah, so Tilly Clemenc, we talked about this before on the podcast, but she was too ugly to live. So she existed in Chicago at the time that Chicago the Musical is set, where everyone was just fucking killing each other all the time. The murder rate was ridiculously high, and it was huge. And just like it happens in the musical, it was really big. There was media storms around it, and they were always trying to catch like which lovely murderess is up next.
Yeah, there was a lot of women murdering their partners, and yeah, it was rife, halcyon days. And Tilly Clemenc, who did she murder? Did she murder her?
Well, I think it was her partner, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's one of those episodes that's not really stuck in my head, I'm ever so sorry. But when she was on trial, there was actual comments about her physical appearance.
Yeah, because up until then, they had been quite beautiful waifs, like being like, just like Roxy Hart being like, oh, and I didn't even know, and I just shot him, and it was a crime of passion, I don't even remember doing it. But Tilly Clemenc was like, yeah, I did it. and, you know, was like, poisoned them with rat poison. And because she looked like May, they were like, yeah, we're not going to let you live. So she was one of the first women to be found guilty of murder, even though she was sort of less ostensibly guilty than the others. And, you know, because there was this whole thing of which often happens with poison is like, was it actually that she just wasn't washing her teacups properly? Which feels like a slight in another way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
I've heard she doesn't wash her teacups.
Would you rather go down being thought to be evil, but at least deliberately unsanitary, or just a bit unhygienic and judged by other women?
Oh, I think go down in flames.
Go down in flames,
yeah. Yeah, go down as a murderer rather than, you know, a slut in the old-fashioned sense of the world.
A slattern.
Slattern.
As I used to say.
Yeah. But in slut, that as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm adding another terrible word.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Let's throw them around. So,
when you say she looked like you, well, you're very hot. What are you talking about?
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to interject.
I know how to upsell what I've got. Do you know what I mean?
But if you say, I mean,
I don't imagine she rocked up to the court like this.
I was going
to
say, if she walked in like this, just, you know, the gun, that's you. Father, gun.
This is literally razzle dazzle what
it
I've
is.
Got on.
It
but
is.
She was kind of unapologetic, was sort of like bigger in her frame, didn't want to dress up because they were told to like soften your appearance and change your hair and look a bit like they did with jumping into another crime here with O.J. Simpson's attorney in the case, that they were like, you're too smart, you're an educated woman, your features seem harsh, you need to soften yourself up. And like, when there is a guy who is clearly guilty, sue me, clearly guilty, they put all the pressure on his attorney to change her appearance so she was more likable. She's got that fucking awful perm.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm going to throw a hot take on the table now. Is it a female privilege that we can soften our appearance and look vulnerable and get away with more?
No, because the male equivalent of that is when they put a suit on. It is, isn't it? When you see Ted Bundy, like, you know, like when he's, you know, not all grizzled and stuff and he suddenly got a suit on, that was a big part of it. They were like, God, well, he looks great and he's very clean cut and it doesn't seem like something he would do.
It's true, but I'm still going to put it out there. I still think it's a female privilege. I'm going to put it out there further. It's a white woman privilege.
Yes.
That white women can cry and get away with stuff. One time I was running through a music festival and I had to get to a gig inside the festival, and it was one of those ones where it was, you know, I'd been sent the wrong way and blah, blah, blah. Wasn't my fault, guys.
Classic white woman stuff.
Let the jury. It wasn't my fault. But when I got to a certain point, I was coming around, a man said, you have to go to the back because we're checking all the bags. And I thought, well, if I get my bag checked and stand in that half hour queue, I'm going to miss the gig. And I was frustrated. I was hot. I'd hate running around at festivals. I just, you know, I found all of that camping, not that I was camping, don't be ridiculous, but the other people were, and it makes me feel exhausted. And there are tents in my peripheral, and I just was like, exhausted, there's nowhere to sit, all of that. Anyway, so I was feeling close to tears, but I strategically, probably, if I'm completely honest with you, let them out. And the man looked at me and went, oh, all right, just go through. And I was meeting another comedian who was a woman of colour, and we were talking about it, and I said, I feel really bad about it because I know that it is white female privilege. And she went, oh, yeah, 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 I would have been sent to the back. And I said, and imagine if that was an Asian or a Middle Eastern man. I mean, he would have been searched twice if he'd started to try and get out of the search. And we were talking about that. Imagine if that was a black man. It was only then that I realised a friend had asked me to bring their recreational substances in my backpack. Not mine, because I wouldn't. But, and I went, oh, fuck. Like, I've just realised these are in the bag. And I just sort of thought, yeah, the best mule is a white woman who doesn't know she's carrying. It's true. I didn't know to look nervous. I could just look vulnerable. So I really do, I think, especially where this intersects with race, but even I would say white women over white men, if we do a cry, we can get away with more stuff. And I just want to start acknowledging where female privilege is, because I think it really helps men to acknowledge their privilege when they have it. Because I think men do have a lot more privilege a lot of the time, but where it intersects, sometimes not. I think white women have got a lot of privilege that we don't acknowledge. Mm. That should really get a round of applause, actually.
Oh, what's this? Question time.
I think if you're a white woman, you should be clapping. That's all I'm going to say.
I feel on sort of the appearing vulnerable, like using vulnerability as like to get away with things and stuff like that. I feel that a lot of people make the assumption about me because I'm small and without makeup I look about 12. I seem to spend my entire life being a certain way so people don't assume that I'm vulnerable. Does that make sense? Like, the amount of times, if I've not got makeup on and I've got flat shoes on, people just... Look, revolving doors don't even know that I exist in that scenario. So some people just totally overlook me. And I think people think that I'm very sensitive because I'm small and young-looking-ish. And, do you know what I mean? So,
well, that's the other side of the coin, is when you want to be taken seriously, sometimes you're not. I'm not saying being seen as vulnerable is always useful. Many times in the boardroom, it's not a privilege, but in the courtroom, it is.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I could definitely get away with a murder, is basically what I'm saying.
Unless you had a drink in you.
Oh.
And then they'd be like, oh, we see what's happened here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even raise my voice, let alone strangle somebody with my own hands.
And then 2 beers later, oh, it's a fucking cunt anyway.
And I'd do it again. And again.
He had a garden. He had a garden.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about, I mean, that's classic, isn't it? I hadn't thought about the like racial implication of that. And I guess it is, yeah, a white lady privilege to be like, I'll just make my hair look nice, which is what literally happens in the film, is they dye her hair blonde and make it all nice, and then she bats her eyelids and she gets let off. And the one, when they do the cell block tango, the one that doesn't get let off is the only one who can't speak English.
Yes, she's an immigrant.
Yeah,
and she's the innocent one.
Exactly, she's the only innocent one. And Tilly Klimek was a Polish immigrant as well. Mm-hmm. So there was a big division anyway in the Polish community in Chicago.
It's interesting how often appearance is discussed when women are either murdered or on trial for a murder. When someone's young, white, pretty, it's deemed more of a tragedy, isn't it? It's reported as more of a tragedy. Especially if you think about things, and then how things are overshadowed. So when Meredith Kircher was murdered, Amanda Knox was on trial, people totally forgot about the victim there, and it was all, oh, Foxy Knoxy. Because a woman who happened to be attractive was accused of committing a murder. I remember that being so distasteful and so far from what should be reported.
They did it with Joanna Dennehy as well, who's a very recent serial killer and a woman. They were like, whoa, sexy angel of death. And she's like, no, she's just going around stabbing people. And she was a fugitive for a while. Mm. And they're like, whoa, size 8 though. Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So this woman who you were talking about, sorry, I forgot her name. Tilly. So sorry, Tilly. I should have remembered your name. How many people did she kill?
3, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 3.
What motivated her?
I think she is one of the 1% that kills for convenience. Mm. So I think that she had just got fucked off and was like, see ya.
Convenience?
Yeah, that's my favourite.
When is it convenient to kill anybody?
I'll be honest.
It's always inconvenient. You've got to get rid of the body. That's so much more inconvenient than just putting up with them.
I don't think I should say this, but I'm going to.
Don't worry, it is recorded forever, Rachel. So.
That arse sex thing hasn't followed you around at all.
Arse sex.
You can have arse sex at my sex event.
It is, that is Partridge as well, arse sex.
I can understand when people, when women kill for convenience, because the amount of times in my life that I just go, that person could just die, I would find things a lot easier. And it's a horrible way to think, and I wouldn't do it. But I understand.
The body, the strength you need to get rid of a body, though, it's so... I've seen Breaking Bad, it's a lot. You have to put them in a bath of acid or something if you can't bury them outside. Like, how would I get rid of the body?
I think Birkenhair started as convenience killers. Mm. Basically, someone hadn't paid their rent and they were like, let's just kill them. And then sold their cadavers, which was easier.
Oh, what year was this?
Because they were like, they're never going to... it was a while ago now. When the bloody law came in Edinburgh ages ago when there were still horses knocking around.
Like the 1800s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you could sell a cadaver to a doctor?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Dr. Yeah. Robert Peel is who they were selling it to.
What, the man that Bobbies are named after?
No. You, Robert Knox.
Robert
you
Knox,
just, you just...
mixed up my academics. Robert Knox, yeah, they were selling to, who was a surgeon who was like really famous because Edinburgh was leading in medicine and because they had this fresh supply of bodies coming from somewhere. People think they're grave robbers, but they weren't. But they started off killing for convenience. Yeah.
Robert was the one who knocks.
Nice.
Hashtag Breaking Bad. See how I've linked those two ideas seamlessly. It's not good when you have to explain how clever your joke was, but sometimes it's necessary, sometimes it's necessary.
And there's also a few killers that we've looked at. So I think Elizabeth Bathory and Delphine Lalaurie, although Delphine I'd say is on the fence, but they've been very powerful women. And I think some of the rumours around them, these are historical cases as well, were based in unseating a powerful businesswoman. So Elizabeth Bathory, she owned so much land and things. And so revisionists say that she was a carrying out sort of basic medical stuff, whatever that word is.
Procedures.
There we go. So, peasant girls, if they got pregnant, they would need abortions, otherwise they'd be sort of cast out. And she was apparently was sort of carrying them out. So that's what revisionists say, that she wasn't actually torturing people and bathing in their blood, is that all those sort of like chopped up women, she was just doing them a favour.
To just defend her for a second... Maybe she was trying hard to give them an abortion because that's what they needed and wanted and it wasn't legal. And then it went wrong and then she had to get rid of the body. Because I can see that happening. If someone bled out and then you think, oh God, now I'm going to go down.
Yeah.
You might... Mm. No, you wouldn't bathe in their blood.
No, that does feel like... That tips her into the other side, doesn't it?
That's in the cons column.
But what's really interesting is that bathing in blood thing is picked up in all kinds of folklore, so that feels like a thing that was added on top to make it more sensationalist.
Yeah. I think as well with people like Bathory and Delphine Lalaurie, I think it's interesting because it shows how sort of gossip around women tends to stick and sort of informs people's opinions of them years and years and years to come.
Questions from the audience because we've got 9
Can
minutes
I ask
to go.
You one really quickly?
Oh yes, please.
Because I think that everyone is interested in at least one serial killer. Is there anyone that has ever taken your eye as interesting?
Well,
that you've read up about.
When I was a child, I genuinely thought that a serial killer was somebody who'd killed so many people they got their own television series, as fictitiously, they would make a biopic about you, sort of thing. That they would make a TV series about you, and so it took me years to work out that a serial killer was someone who'd killed lots of different people. But I suppose Jack the Ripper. I did the tour with my sister who came over, and when I found my biological, I found 3 biological sisters. One of them came over to London and wanted to go on the Jack the Ripper tour, and she said, "When I was a kid, I thought I was Jack the Ripper." And I had this whole thing that in another life I'd been Jack the Ripper. And I was like, normally it's something like Cleopatra. And she was like, no, I wasn't fascinated with him. And my birth mother, Mel's mum, said, yeah, she genuinely thought she was Jack the Ripper and was obsessed with Jack the Ripper. So we couldn't wait to go on the tour. She couldn't. And so I was like, oh.
Oh, the memories.
So she wore a top hat and everything. I really get into it.
She did not. She was a bit disappointed by the tour, in fact, because actually it's just trailing around the East End.
Going, that building's not there anymore, but it's sort of here.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But I suppose the fact that was, we don't know who that was, and that person went to the grave with that secret. And there's so much mystery about who it was. And so, you know, every now and again it comes out that there's someone says it's a painter or it was Queen Victoria herself or, yeah. you know, something absolutely ludicrous. So I suppose, yeah, Jack the Ripper's the one that I think, because it's also in that Victorian fog, and I think anything that's too recent, I find too disturbing.
Yeah.
And I think there's a distance on that. It's in that Oliver Twist umbrella where you can look at sadness because there's just enough years. It feels different enough. Do you have any insight as to who Jack the Ripper was?
We hate Jack the Ripper.
We hate it. Yeah,
he's our worst.
Our least favourite one. Because we like the psychology, and you don't know the psychology except it's an arrogant man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like the least...
Could have been Queen Victoria.
Yeah, well, that's an Alan Moore graphic novel, that's really taken flight.
Yeah.
It was his... Because Queen Victoria's physician, isn't it? That,
yeah.
Because Albert was in a relationship with one of the women. There's a brilliant book, actually, called Five, that is on my Christmas list, about the women who were definitely killed by Jack the Ripper. And it's basically that we've assumed that they're sex workers and that I think only one was. It was just a sort of sensationalist thing in the paper. So do seek that out. Any questions before we go? Raise a hand. Oh, there's a few...
Oh. On the Legends page last week, there was a question going about how in 10 years' time do you think there will be any celebrities that will be outed as secret serial killers?
Oh. Prince Andrew.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so.
Any other questions?
If you could combine Doctor Who and Mindhunter, which murder would you investigate?
JonBenet Ramsey. Shouldn't cheer like that, but that's fine. Yeah, I think we all have a sneaking suspicion who it is. But it'd be good to have definitive proof because there's still a little girl who's dead and there's a lot of tragedy around that family, and it would be nice if someone was brought to justice and even with a more understanding eye, seeing who it was and how the circumstances can occur.
John George Haig, love the clothes.
Very into his clothes as well, wasn't he?
Dapper.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, John George Haig's, yeah.
And there's someone in the front row.
So kind of linked, actually, but I was thinking, if you had three wishes, would you use one of them on finding out, like, who committed a murder?
Absolutely not. I want a sauna. No. Oh, right, okay, well, now I feel like a cunt. If you didn't hear it, she said, well, I've always wanted to know who killed Madeleine McCann. I'm like, oh. That sauna looks a lot more distasteful now, doesn't it?
Rachel?
Nope. I don't think it's my responsibility. I think it's the responsibility of the police force. I would just like a nice house and a couple of nice dogs.
I don't think you need to waste a wish on dogs. Just get dogs from
Battersea. Oh, no, you're right.
Dogs home.
Well, at first I'd do that thing where you wish for more wishes, but I know you're not allowed to do that, so I'd wish that you can wish that. And then I'd wish for a disclaimer. I'd wish for a disclaimer before each wish that someone goes, are you sure you want that? And I go, yes or no. I'd have a system, I'd be happy.
Right. I would wish, for one of my wishes, that all crimes that were... violent and were currently hidden would come to light and be brought to justice. And in that one wish, I would have solved all of your problems, sort of saved Kiri, she can have a sauna. Old house and dogs over here because I've just covered it. And the other two, one would involve a dinner with John Hamm. It would be like a long... No, fuck it, it's a wish. A long weekend. After that, if he doesn't want to be with me, let him go. If he comes back, he's mine. If he doesn't, he never was. But a long weekend is enough time for him to sort of... Maybe actually dinner's better because it's harder to...
I'm so aware that we're going over and this has only just started, this fantasy.
It's red now, isn't it?
It's easier to reveal your flaws over a long weekend, isn't it? So just a dinner. Because then that's, you know, one step in. And then the third wish would be equality for the genders. And, yeah, because, I mean, it wouldn't...
Still a sauna for me, actually. thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's really nice of you.
Kiri and I... are going to be back here next week.
On Sunday, the 8th of September at midday. I'll do a show called A Musical. That's all... Yeah! the best. We started doing a podcast. It's the most fun ever. And we're doing a live one here at 12 o'clock on the 8th of September with Deborah Frances White as our brilliant guest. So come back and enjoy
that. It's the podcast, isn't it, that we're doing?
Yeah.
So we're talking about musicals.
We're talking about musicals. And, I mean, there is a piano present, so let's see what happens.
So I can prep a song or four.
You can, yes, great. Absolutely.
So please come and buy tickets for that, because this is really, I feel like nobody cares about me the way a musical cares about me. They make all my dreams come true. Rachel, have you got anything to plug?
Next Sunday, I will be attending a local dog show near my friend's house in Lewisham. So that's right. Where I'll be.
Can I just say thank you so much to Kieran and Rachel for agreeing to do this when we phoned up and said... Okay, thank you so much. Do follow us at DeborahFW, at GuiltFemPod.
Kiri Pritchard MC on Twitter. You can find it. You can use Google.
At Rachel Fairburn.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Eric King's Place. You've been great. Kiri Pritchard McLean, everybody. Rachel Fairburn, everybody. I've been Deborah Frances White. You've been great. Thank you so much. That's our show. You have been listening to All Killer No Feminism with Rachel Fairburn, Kiri Pritchard McLean, and me, Deborah Frances White. The recording engineer was Chris Sharp. The producer was Tom Zielinski for The Spontaneity Shop. Music was by Mark Hodge. Thanks to Zoe, Sally, and everyone at King's Place, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about All Killer No Filler, go to kiripritchardmclean.co.uk. And for more information about The Guilty Feminist and our podcast crossover season, go to guiltyfeminist.com.
Special crossover episode of All Killer No Filler podcast, and oh fuck, I fucked it. Right. Stop looking at me, you're making me embarrassed. I've written this down.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.